Okay, you're next. We'll take your phone calls with our guest, Diane Morang, on Coast to Coast AM. Diane, once again, how do people get the ebook?
They need to go to www.mobypocket.com, and that's a division of Amazon spelled M as in Mary, O, B as in baby, I as in ice cream, and then pocket, P-O-C-K-E-T. And Moby Pocket is one word, so it's mobypocket.com. And as I said, I'm going to keep the $5 price until the New York publisher says that they won't allow that anymore.
All right, very good. To the phones we go. West of the Rockies, Ethan in Salt Lake City. You're on the air with us. Hi, Ethan.
Hello. My dog, Chupacabra, says hello.
Hey, Chupa.
I have a question for your guest. Is there any place or time where these dimensions intersect? I'm thinking in particular about, like, Sonoma, Arizona, the Bermuda Triangle. Then sometimes with just creatures like the Chupacabras or like Bigfoot or even, some of the shadow people, that come out. I mean, are there intersections between the dimensions? And I'll get my answer off air.
You got it.
There are areas. And in fact, I have an entire chapter about other dimensions in there and about these portals to the other dimensions. Now, I don't know if he said Sonoma, Arizona, or if he said Sedona, and I think he probably met
Sedona.
Yeah, there definitely is one in Sedona. I had a really bad experience up there, and I wasn't as scared as much as I started to panic. I used to go up to this one piece of land that I really liked and wanted to buy, and what happened was, little things occur and you don't really think of them. You think, oh, it was just a trick of the eye, like they say in French, or I didn't, really see it right the first time. And I noticed that, there was one thing that disappeared up there while I was up there. But anyway, what happened was, I won't go into the whole lay of the land, but I walked around to the front of this land, which was usually, oh gosh, it must have been like 15 feet high. It was cut by a bulldozer to put a road through. And I would take my motorhome up there usually, and the embankment was higher than the top of the windows of my motorhome. So it had to be, I would say, like 15 feet. And the one time I walked around to this side of the land, and the embankment was only 3 feet. So I thought, okay, well, somebody brought a bulldozer up here, and they cut off the top of the hill. But I'm looking up there, and I see that there's all this old growth, bushes and trees and, grass and everything else. And I realized, and I'm looking down below, and I'm thinking, well, maybe they raised the ditch or something like that. But I realized that this was really not the way it was supposed to be, and I started to panic. And I knew I had to calm myself. And the only thing I could think of was, first of all, I had to get out of there as fast as I could. And the second thing was that I needed to retrace my footsteps as exactly as possible. And I did. And I got out of there. And I had brought my car up there at that time. And I got out of there as fast as I could. And I'll tell you something, I never went back. And I had been to that land many, many times over a period of years. And I knew that land very, very well. I knew every tree, everything. And when I saw that that embankment was only 3 feet high, and I knew it had to be 15 feet high, that really did it for me. And as I say, I've never gone back there since. There were other things that happened up there that, as I said, something would disappear or something like that. One time when I was on that land, and I don't know if this means anything or not, but 5 black unmarked helicopters came from the southeast, and they were flying right over this land. And for some reason, I didn't want them to see me, and I put my head down. And they flew over me, and they flew in the direction of the northwest. And I don't know how far they were going because I don't know what distance helicopters can travel. But it was just a very frightening thing, and I'm really glad that I didn't buy that land because it scared me. In fact, one of the things that happened before I ever heard of a, this was some years ago, and before I ever heard of a program called Coast to Coast, and I ever heard of George Noory or Art Bell, I was looking at something on this land, and I'm thinking real estate. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this black shadow in the shape of a human being, and it was kind of like a dwarf. It looked like a dwarf come striding up the hill. And I got scared then. Anyway, I stood as still as a statue, and I remember it was very cold on because I was all bundled up. And it got to a point where it saw me. And I just stood there and looking at it out the corner of my eye, and it went past me. It was some yards to my right, and it went behind a bush, and it turned, and it was facing me. And I'm looking at it out of the corner of my eye, and I decided, okay, I've got to face this. So I started to turn very slowly, and it ducked down behind the bush, and the bush was about 3 feet high. So I stood there for a while because I was really scared, and I decided I am going to go, and I'm going to look behind that bush. And I very slowly started to go over there, but I waited a fair amount of time before I attempted that. And I went ahead, and I got to where I could see behind the bush, and there was nothing there. But interestingly enough, I'm not the only person who has seen this, because there was a house. There is a house down below. And anyway, one of the boys who is now, I got to know that family, he's now in college, and he was telling me not long ago that he was driving past on the road, and there was a black shadow person, and he didn't know about shadow people either, standing up beside the road, and he passed it, and he said he looked in the rearview mirror, but he couldn't see it in the mirror. But he said that whenever he would go up on that land, he would get a creepy feeling. I didn't have that, but I did notice then that things that I had thought were, you know, my mistake, I must have been mistaken about this, I must have been mistaken about that, weren't my mistake at all. There was really actually paranormal things that were happening. And as I said, this fellow would probably be very interested in that chapter in the book. As I say, there's a whole chapter in the book that goes into the corridors to other dimensions.
First time caller line, Rob in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hey, Rob, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I had a question for, well, I have several questions, if you don't mind. But
no,
I have
go ahead.
Primary
sure.
questions. The first being my my girlfriend, who I've been dating for about 3 years now. She claims to, I don't know if the proper word would be psychic, or I think medium would probably be the more accurate phrase, but she claims to feel energies from different places, like she, especially like negative energy. She feels that like really strong from like certain like houses and places and things like that. And I was wondering if you thought that was like a seeing like through the dimensional thing, or if that was just like the energy of the place in our third dimension.
My opinion is that she's actually picking this up. I truly believe her, and that she is feeling the negative energy, because there are people who will feel the energy that exists in a certain place, and she's probably in the high frequency end of the spectrum, the sensory spectrum. And yes, I truly believe that if she could be feeling this. Some people don't like to go into old buildings because they say they can feel the life that went in there before. And I know of somebody who went into the old Whaley House in Old Town San Diego. And what happened was they were, you know, you get some kind of a little brochure and you go through it and stuff like that. And she said that when she got into the back of the house, on the right there was a bedroom. And she got this really strange feeling, a very unpleasant feeling. And later she found out that was where their daughter had committed suicide. So I truly believe that your girlfriend is very legitimate in what she's feeling.
Yeah, I don't really doubt her. There's a funny little anecdotal story. On one of our first dates, I took her to the bodies exhibit that was touring the country.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, real bodies, yeah.
Right, with the real people, and I'm in the medical field, so, you know, it wasn't really that big a deal to me, and I was taking her through there, and, like, not even halfway through the exhibit, like, she just passed out in the middle of exhibit on me. But the second question I had for you was, you said that the animals, specifically dogs, would see into these extra-dimensional spaces and be able to, like, perceive the spirits more clearly than we were. Would you think that there's any particular type or breed of dog that would be more suited to something like this?
I don't know if there's any type or breed, but dogs I know can hear high frequency, and I also believe that they see high frequency because I know that from my research work that dogs can see ghosts and they will respond to them.
Okay, great. Thanks, Rob. Next up, let's go to west of the Rockies. We've got you, Sean. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was curious if you did any research into theosophy for your book.
Theosophy? No. I did actually, I think I looked at that, and there was some information I may have gotten out of it. The Theosophical Publishing Company, I believe, is in Wheaton, Illinois. And I'm not that familiar with Madame Blavatsky's work. I know it on just a very, very cursory basis.
Okay. Elizabeth, Woodstock, New York. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Yeah, this topic about preparing and maximizing what happens to us after we die is definitely a serious one. I'd like to make a comment about meditation and preparing for death with meditation. I'd been investigating meditation since I was 12, and now I'm 49, and at a certain point, it seemed like some meditation techniques don't really bring you to peace and all that very quickly, but I eventually came across a Taoist meditation teacher who not only talks about meditation techniques extremely clearly, but goes into incredible detail about how to prepare for death while you're alive, so that when it's almost like practicing, so that when you die, you know what to do. And it sounds a lot more complicated than just sort of praying and meditating. I mean, his meditation books read like owner's manual to the human energy system, and they're very specific, and they really work. But what he says is, in preparing for death, you have to go through all these advanced sort of opening circuits and meridians and all that. But when you get to a certain point, you have to create some sort of little energy being in a point, an acupuncture point in your belly. And that once you start creating it, and this guy's not airy-fairy, he's very down to earth, and, you know, it takes from the point that you actually can get that thing going, it's something that you create in your belly so that when you die, you can take it up your chakras and out the top of your head, and that you can leave your body very safely that way. But apparently, once you start it, which takes a lot to even get it started, I just read recently that it takes 17 years to completely fully develop it. So a person, according to this, and I tend to believe him because of how impressed I've been with his meditation techniques and how, you know, how really effective they are, it really seems to take quite a lot to prepare, and you want to hope that you accomplish this before you leave your body, which, you know, he's saying you have to really get on this, and even that technique of creating this little energy body that leaves out the top of your head, to even get to that point takes much more basic and fundamental things that you have to first accomplish. But
well, let's get a reaction if we can. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I understand that she's probably correct, and there are different forms of meditation. And
sure.
In the book, there is something that I speak of that's similar to what she's talking about, and that has to do with the one chakra, I think it is, that is at the navel, and then the heart chakra above that is another point, and then within that heart chakra there is another essence, and then that's what it retains the whole lifetime. That's the only thing I can think of with the type of meditations that I studied about that would be similar to what she said. But I'm sure that, you know, since there are so many different types of meditation, that the man who is teaching her is very knowledgeable, and he's probably teaching her something that's very effective.
Okay, next up, let's go to you, Sammy, in Rochester, New York. Hey, Sammy.
Hi. When I was a young teenager, my mother committed suicide. And shortly after she committed suicide, I started to wake up rather regularly at the same time, 1 o'clock, 1:11 in the morning. Now, my mother committed suicide. The address was 111. And 111 is a recurrence in my life, even up over 20 years afterwards. When I look at a clock, I'm afraid to look at a clock around noontime because every time I do, it's like it pops up. If I look at my microwave, it's like 111. It's randomly occurs. Now, Satan has come to me. I have seen him. I have felt him, and he paralyzes me. I want to know if there's any relation to my mother committing suicide and this. It started out at first when I woke up at 111, I would hear symphonic music. My mother loved symphonies, and she always played symphonic music. And I would wake up, and I'd hear it for probably about 30, it would last no more than 30 seconds to a minute, and then it would shut off, and then I'd go back to sleep. As I got older, I pretty much gave up my religion shortly after my mother killed herself, because I couldn't believe that God would make my mother go to hell because she committed suicide. And I started getting into Wiccan and magic and Satanism, studying LaVey, the Mad Hatter, Monte Summers, and things of the sort. And that's when Satan started coming to me. Sometimes he appears, and sometimes what he does is just paralyzes me, and I'm awake. And the feeling that I experience is I am paralyzed. I can hear everything that's going around me, and I'm in. All I feel is like it's a terror and a fear on a level which I've never experienced before. It just happened to me. In fact, recently I stayed over a friend's house about 3 weeks ago, and I was trying to scream out to my friend, and I thought that my friend could hear me, because this is what I try to do, is I try to wake myself up or scream out, and to wake myself up or to make it go away, even though he's not, I don't see him, I could feel it. Is there any, like, correlation? I mean, I don't know what's going on, and even my pet sometimes will not come near me. I have a parrot, and parrots could see beyond the regular spectrum of human, you know, the regular colors of the spectrum.
Oh, yeah, they can. Diane, we're going to hit this break, but I want you to collect your thoughts and give him a response when we come back, if you would, okay?
Sure.
And again, address the suicide portion of that, because that's one of those no-nos that you had mentioned. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, it's called Alcohol Can Be a Gas. We're going to talk about alternative energy with David Bloom. That's our next Coast to Coast show. Okay, back to some final phone calls with you, Diane. But before we do, I'll let you talk about the individual's mother's suicide in that entire perspective.
Okay, I think to respond to this, I think that he's dealing with more than one issue. First of all, I think that his mother is showing him that she is with him, and she may even want to help him. Remember that hell is not forever. A lot of times people don't want to approach the light, even if they can see the light, because they're afraid to face God. And so maybe she's done her time now, and she's gone to her son, and she's given him these signs that she's with him. Maybe she's protecting him. Maybe she wants to help him. And maybe all he needs to do is acknowledge this. Now, the second thing is, I think that this issue where he got into Wiccan and now he's having these manifestations of an evil entity, first of all, ordinarily I would say, well, contact a Catholic archdiocesan office, but I've talked to these people around the country, and unless you're flying around the room, they're really not interested in you. What I would suggest he do is contact your friend Evelyn Paglini,
mm-hmm.
who she is a witch, and I think that she would know how to handle this. If indeed she cannot do anything about it, then I would say at that time, did he say he was from New York?
Yes, Rochester, okay. New York.
Okay, well, in New York City, they have an archdiocese in New York City that's handled a lot of exorcisms. And from what I was told, that they had, I think that they said that the cases that they have actually had of possession had gone up about 600% because of people being involved with, Satanism. Not witchcraft, but Satanism. And there's, a difference there. And so I would suggest that he, first of all, contact Evelyn Paglini, which I guess he can get from your people or from going to your website. Maybe he can link over in some way or go to Evelyn Paglini's website and first deal with her and see if she knows how to fight fire with fire. And then after that, if that doesn't work, he should call the bishop's office for the city of New York and tell them, what his situation is, and then let them take it over from there. My understanding is that what they do is, first of all, they make a person go through a lot of psychiatric tests, and if they pass all those, then they will pursue it further.
Okay, great. Let's go to our first-time caller, Matthew in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, George. I just had two quick questions, if I may.
Absolutely.
Okay. First off, I kind of regret saying it now, but I've dealt with drugs a couple times, nothing serious, but I just didn't know her take on certain drugs that were used in ancient cultures, like ayahuasca brew or mushrooms. Because I got to say, when I did mushrooms, it was definitely, I would say, a religious
experience,
yeah. Yes. So that was my first question.
All right, Diane.
Well, what exactly is the question? You say that you took these drugs, but I don't understand what the question
well,
is.
Well, I mean, like alcohol, what happens to him when he goes to the other side? I mean, are they hold it against him?
Remember that you have to, have true contrition, and you have to make restitution to those you've harmed. He sounds like he has true contrition. I'm not a clergy person. Ian Punnett may be able to help him more with that. But so you change your life, and you lead a good life, and you don't do that anymore. And that should resolve the issue. As long as you're not living that life constantly, then, that's fine. You've turned your life around. You've gotten beyond what your problem was. And just, forget about it. Go on from there. You're leading a good life, and you're not going back to, leading a bad life. And remember, that when you die, you have to have good thoughts, things like that, feel love and peace when you die. And it sounds like, this is not something you're continuing unless I, couldn't hear everything that you said.
No, I think you've got that. I think you've got that right, Diane. So they're not going to hold that against you, Matthew.
No, I just didn't know because ayahuasca was definitely used as a, to raise,
consciousness. I
didn't know if that had anything to do, with the ancient cultures trying to reach a higher level of consciousness.
Well, I'll tell you, anytime I think there is a drug involved, I think it's wrong. Just from what I have been able to do with my years of research, which is probably 25 to 30 years, that's why they have meditation. With meditation, you don't use any type of outside stimulus.
Good point. West of the Rockies, Dale in Las Vegas. Go ahead, Dale.
Hi, I just had a couple of points of... I remember Harry Houdini was very determined when he found out he was going to die that once he crossed over, he was going to give some sign to people that knew him that there, you know, what it was like on the other side, or that there was indeed life after death, and never happened. So there might be some evidence that there is no life after death, and maybe all the ancient Egyptians were wrong preparing for that. A couple other points. Dogs can't, I don't think they can see better than human beings. They can't even see in color. They can smell better, they can hear better, but they only see in black and white. So I don't think they can see ghosts.
Well, first of all, the theory that dogs could only see in black and white was just very recently discounted. They are able to see some colors. That has been discovered. As far as dogs being able to see ghosts, I disagree with you 100% on that, because I know of cases where that happened, and I know of a few cases where that happened. I do believe, as I said before, that if they can hear high frequency, they probably see high frequency, and bioplasmic energies exist at a high frequency level.
I would agree with you on the animal situation, Diane. I've just had too many people call this program over the years with incredible testimony of these strange things that their animals seem to have witnessed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go to Amy in North Carolina. You're up with us. Hello, Amy.
Yeah, I'm calling. Well, it's about my boyfriend, not me. It's experiences that he has, and he also said his grandmother has it, where when he sleeps at night, he's afraid to sleep alone or with the door open, because a lot of times in different places, he'll feel like this ghostly presence lay on him, and he can't close his eyes, he can't speak, and it's like the pressure's so strong he can hardly breathe. And his grandmother told him that this happened to her too, and that the best thing that she could do to make it stop was, he can't speak. He's tried to yell at me in his sleep. He said he's tried to push me and kick me, and he can't move. And she told him to, like, cuss the entity out, like, in his mind, like, you know, get off of me, you know, like, cuss them out and tell them to leave him alone. After a few minutes, they'll leave, but he's just so afraid. You know, he's 33 years old, and this has happened his whole life, and he's afraid to sleep alone. Because things like this happen. When, you know, he lived with his brother, he would sleep with his brother, and, you know, it would still happen, but at least someone would be there. You know, if I hold mm-hmm. him or something, if somebody is holding him, it doesn't happen.
Let me ask you this. Does this always happen in the same house?
No. We lived... He found out in a trailer he was living in with his brother. His brother bought that trailer. That a woman was murdered there, and it happened there all the time. And he couldn't sleep in his own room. He had to sleep with his brother. We got an apartment together, and this is the first time I ever knew of it happening to him. He said he heard some talking, and he heard a scream, and he thought it was me talking in my sleep. And then all of a sudden there was that pressure. And he knew what was going on, and he said he was trying his best to wake me up, but he couldn't move. And he was so afraid that he couldn't sleep for the next couple of days. And he, you know, we've moved again since then. That was, you know, a couple of years ago. And it's happened two times here when I work third shift, when I leave the bedroom door open. And it's like the you know, I've heard some bumps and moves and stuff like that. I don't know if there's spirits in where we live now, but, you know, it's happened twice when I've left the bedroom door open. I try not to leave the bedroom door open because I know it's afraid.
What kind of guidance here, Diane?
Well, here's the thing. It sounds, first of all, like the one issue is sleep paralysis. As far as what he's picking up here, George, I know that you've had some other guests on your show that are much more prolific in this area than I am, as far as my knowledge is concerned. And maybe you or your staff can refer her to one of those people who had discussed this as part of their presentation on your program.
That could be. Okay, very good. Well, thanks for that. Let's go next to International Line, John in Toronto. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
Actually, I just want to respond to the previous caller. I just got chills when she just said that Her boyfriend can't sleep with the door open because since I was little, I can never sleep with a closet door open. And I just, and every single, and personally, you know, logically, rationally speaking, that sounds kind of ridiculous. But whenever I do, I think, you know, because now I'm growing up, you know, I'm a financial, I'm in finance, and when I think, you know, this is ridiculous. What am I doing? I'm going to leave it open. You know, I'm older, I'm an adult, you know, whatever, right? But whenever I do close it, I all the time get, you know, nightmares and always clearly remember it every morning. So, you know,
close those closet doors, close everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, I leave the regular door open. I leave that cause in my room, I have a bathroom, my own bathroom, private bathroom, my closet and the outside door. So I'll leave two of those open but always a closet door specifically has to be closed at all times. Like, I mean, I have no idea what's wrong with
that. Well, you know, you're not alone in this at all. You're not alone definitely at all. Diane?
No, he isn't. And this is actually not an uncommon situation at all. Do you feel that, you know, there is some entity that is in the closet?
No, not at all. I mean, that's a funny thing because when I'm in my room, you know, I'll be happy, you know, something would happen during the day, I'll feel great, I'll feel energized, I'll just come from the gym, you know, all worked up, and, you know, I'll come home, I'll sleep, and I'll think, okay, now I got a decision to make. Do I close the closet door, or do I open the closet door? And no one I know ever makes the decision, and so I'll think, okay, you know, whatever, I'll leave it slightly open, and then I know it's funny because I'll have, you know, a sort of, you know, nightmarish dreams, and when I leave it completely open, I'll have, you know, full out blown nightmares, and I have no idea what's up with that.
How long has this been going on in your life?
Since I was little. My grandfather died in my old house, and, you know, there's a lady who used to live in our basement who used to have you know, he's a prayer law and stuff, and, you know, and my dad also reported that he's seen a lot of, you know, like, entities and ghosts and stuff outside the house whenever he'd come home from work. But, you know, besides that, I mean, ever since I was, like, 9 or 10, I always, you know, had to make that decision before I, you know, went to sleep.
Are you still living in that house?
No, we've moved out. We used to live in downtown Toronto. Now we live in the outskirts of another town. And, you know, this house is, you know, completely new, you know, furnished, everything. And still, you know, same issue, I guess.
Have you ever actually seen an entity?
No, that's the funny thing. Like, I work at a financial institution, and over there, I also hear stories about ghosts, and everywhere I go, I always hear, yeah, there's ghosts there, you know, people, I've always talked to people, they've seen ghosts, they've seen shadow people, but personally, you know, I believe in them too, but, you know, I've never seen one in my entire life.
Well, you know what, this just may be a carryover from your childhood, and it's become ingrained with you. And actually, it could be a very simple solution. And, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but you might want to consult a psychologist who is a therapist, not a psychiatrist. You don't need a psychiatrist. But this could just be an ingrained reaction that you need to get beyond from your childhood. And I really don't even think it's serious. It's scary, but it doesn't sound like anything is attacking you. It just sounds like it's a carryover from childhood.
Selena in Orlando, Florida, you're up with Diane Morang. Go ahead.
Hi, this is like a very elemental question, which I know probably nobody can answer, but it's one thing that bothers me more than anything else is how does, I mean, I don't have any choice to be in this life and nobody else does either. We're all just suddenly born and just here, and then there's supposed to be all these other dimensions and working up to the highest power and all this, but I mean, how did this all begin where we even just,
well, I'm not
here in the first place?
I'm not sure we don't have the choice. I think sometimes we do, Diane. We have choices.
Oh, I believe so. Absolutely. And how it started, I think it goes back to what we were talking about, God, and what God determined for everybody. I mean, he made the choice for all of us. He made the choice to create us. This is the way he set up the situation. You can believe it. You can disbelieve it. You can do your own research. It's really a matter of choice and belief. And I feel too, you know, that there is such a thing as reincarnation, and that it can be either chosen or it can be enforced. But those are my beliefs, and you know, I'm not going to say that I'm right. I'm not going to make anybody believe the way I do. It's really up to you to kind of find your own way in life.
Next up, Tony in Fort Worth, Texas. Go ahead, Tony. About a couple minutes for you.
Okay. Hey, George, and hi, Diane.
Hi.
I'm on a roll this week. Second time to get through. It must be the full moon. But my question for you, Diane, is two questions I have. And I think a lot how you think. I live my life sort of how you live your life. And so, great show. I would like to know, since I was very young, I had a burning desire to know, you know, who God was. And I went through hundreds of books on spirituality and that sort of thing. And then now later in life, you know, I've done the out-of-body experience thing. And I'm starting to do some healing things with my hands, and they're starting to get warm. And I was just curious, this is my first question.
We'll only get one in, Tone, because we're coming up to the clock.
Should I pursue this, is what I would like to know, Diane. Should I pursue this thing in my life, or should I just let it go? And
pursue
I'll take my answer off the air.
No, you can. I'll just tell you, pursue it.
I definitely suggest
you pursue it, yes.
And what if it's the wrong move?
Well, I think he'll know it. I think that he's doing what he feels was right for him, and that he was on the path with which he was comfortable. And if he's come this far, he can go further. And if he decides at that time that this isn't the right thing for him, he can always turn and walk away.
That's true. Once more, very quickly, where do you get the e-book?
MobiPocket.com, MobiPocket.com. It's a division of Amazon.
You got it. Diane, thanks for being on the program. I appreciate it.
Well, George, I want to thank you and Lisa Lyon very, very much for this opportunity to present this basic material. I really appreciate this.
Great research. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Rebecca Baker, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.